Hola, hola, ¿cómo estamos? Bienvenidos otra vez aquí con Kelsey. Están escuchando el podcast de Acá Entre Nos. Before we begin, I'd like to say that unfortunately my co-host Dawn won't be joining us today. She had something come up, so I am running our last episode of the season all by myself, so bear with me. I'd like to take this moment before we start, though, to remind you once again how important your feedback, comments, and reviews are for us in order for this podcast to continue on the right pathway. We need to hear from you guys. So please, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review after you listen. Es muy, muy importante para que podamos seguir atendiendo el programa como ustedes lo quieren escuchar, que es por favor nos dejen sus reviews, que nos dejen comentarios, ideas, para nosotros saber que estamos haciendo algo bien o que estamos haciendo mal y para arreglar las cosas. So with that said, here we are again with you all, and we have two wonderful guests with me today, so no estoy tan sola. And we are going to be speaking about autism in nuestra comunidad latina. Here with us is Carla Peregrino and Estefania Rubiano, who have a lot of knowledge in this population. So ladies, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Do you want to start, Carla?
Yeah, I'll start. Like Kelsey said, my name is Carla Peregrino. I do have my associate in marriage and family therapy. I have my master's in that, and I've been working with the population for about 4 years. 1 year I did with children, and 3 years I was able to do with adults.
Awesome. Estefania?
And I'm Estefania. I'm also an associate marriage and family therapist. I worked with kids who have autism doing ABA therapy, and I did that for a year, and then I also worked with them at the preschool that I was at for a year, so in total 2 years working with kids who have autism.
Awesome. So we are, well, I, but we, because Dawn Marie's here in spirit, are really excited to have these ladies here with us because this is a very important topic to talk about. According to AutismSpeaks.org, today in 2018, one in every 59 children in the U.S. have autism. And even though Latinx children are still the lowest percentage rate, Latinx children are still at 3.9 to 8, just a bit lower than the Black community, which is at a 5.9 to 11.1 children. So this is good, right? Esto es bueno, pero tristemente no tan bueno. ¿Por qué? Well, because just like our low numbers are good of the children who are affected, the education, resources, and the support for our minority comunidad is even lower. Because of this, the stigma with autism in our community is higher than that of other communities. The support from la comunidad y familias is very low. We're lacking education, and people aren't understanding how it is to deal with this population. The understanding of el autismo is very low because our community lacks that information. Unfortunately, the children of our community are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder at older ages and at the point of more severe symptoms. These are all perspective barriers that not only make it difficult for Latinx families to understand and support their autistic children, but it also makes it a lonely road for the parents who are dealing with autism in their family for the first time. Por estas razones, we, your host, because Dawn Marie's here in spirit, have decided to have an episode on this topic. And what better way to have this discussion than with these two young, wonderful ladies who have experience with this community. We will be now doing a question and answer with these girls, and we'll be giving you information on what autismo looks like in our comunidad, what they have experienced with the parents, families, and children dealing with autism in the Latinx community, and lastly, what advice or resources they might have for you all. En español, hoy en este episodio vamos a estar hablando del autismo en la comunidad latina. En el 2018 descubrieron que el autismo es bajo en la comunidad latina comparado a otras comunidades. Pero en comparación también los recursos que ayudan con esta comunidad en la comunidad latina también son muy bajos. Entonces hoy tenemos aquí a Carla y Estefanía para hablar de este tema y cómo se mira en la comunidad latina. All right, ladies, ¿qué dicen? ¿Empezamos?
Okay.
All right, so we can take turns. Whoever wants to go first, I'll ask the question, and then you guys can give your answer, and then we'll go from there, okay? So I'll repeat the question in English and then in Spanish so that our Spanish-speaking listeners could also tune in. So the first question is, from your experience, how often are children being diagnosed with autism? Y la pregunta primera es, con su experiencia, ¿qué común es que los niños los están diagnosticando con el autismo?
Yo digo que ahorita, como hay más información del autismo, es más frecuentemente que antes. Hace como 20 años, los números eran 1 en 200 niños y ahora es, dijiste, 1 a 59 niños. Así que ahorita hay más información, más recursos y por eso hay más números, más diagnosis del autismo.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. There has been a lot more kids being diagnosed, and it's also higher with boys than with girls. So how many is it? I think it's 1 out of 4. I can't remember the statistic, but it is higher in boys than in girls. I don't know much about why that is, but I have noticed that majority of the kids that I worked with were boys as opposed to girls.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting in that, I mean, also when it comes to gender, or if you're saying boys and girls, just behaviors are different with both genders. I mean, I think even within our community, it comes into the idea of the gender norms of, you know, the little girl's supposed to be playing with this, the little boy's supposed to be playing with this. So I think that also contributes a lot, especially within our community, that contributes a lot to the diagnosing part of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that kind of leads to our next question. We wanted to know if you guys saw if there was any relationship to ADHD within this community, or in your opinion, are Latinx children being misdiagnosed or overdiagnosed with either of these? Y la pregunta es, preguntando a las muchachas que si han visto una relación con ADHD y el autismo, o en su opinión de ellas, que si han visto que los niños latinos son diagnosticados más frecuente o menos que otros niños con los que hayan trabajado.
I think, like anything, obviously autism is on a spectrum, so each case is different, and I don't think I've ever seen the same case twice, if that makes sense. But I have seen where there's multiple diagnoses, so there has been like autism with ADHD. Some even have diagnosed autism with a mental health disorder, so it just depends on the case. And I definitely think that it's being misdiagnosed or overdiagnosed, especially because a lot of these kids go into the education system and they go in only knowing one language, which is Spanish, especially if they have a Spanish-speaking household. And with that, it's really hard for them to adjust to the new environment and learn a new language. And sometimes they could even become withdrawn. And being withdrawn is also something that a lot of, when it comes to diagnosis, that's what they look for. So I can totally see them misdiagnosing because of cultural factors as well.
And the language barrier. Yeah. What about you, Estefania?
I agree. And I think also because they're both neurodevelopmental disorders, I think they do overlap in some of the symptoms that children display. But I agree with what Carla was saying. A lot of kids have more than one diagnosis, and sometimes you'll see autism and ADHD. But it depends, like she said, it's case by case. Like every child is very different. Each one of them is going to present differently, and like their behaviors and their symptoms are going to be different. So we kind of go based on that and treat them based on like what they're presenting.
All right. Awesome. Thank you guys for sharing that. We definitely, when we came up with that question, we didn't have much knowledge in it. And we're wondering how that looks like. Because I don't know about Dawn Marie, since she's not, unfortunately, here. But I've never really worked with autistic or ADHD. I mean, I'm sure I have, and I didn't know they had ADHD. I also, like Estefania, worked at a preschool in a summer camp for a while, and I had one autistic kid in there, but he had a like an assistant or helper kind of with him, so I never really got to like deal with him more one-on-one to really know. So yeah. All right, so our next question is, what does autism look like within the families that you've worked with? Y la siguiente pregunta es, ¿cómo se ve el autismo con las familias con las que ellas hayan trabajado o han trabajado? You want to go first, Estefania?
Yeah, I'll go first. I worked with a lot of Caucasian families, but I also got to work with Latinx families, and I did see like a difference. I felt like a lot of the Caucasian families kind of knew more of the resources that were available for them. They were more, how do you say, like on top of everything that they needed. They had their children in multiple programs or activities. They had like ABA, they had like sports, like anything that they could get their child into, they would do it. And I think for Latinx communities, we just have a harder time knowing what resources are available. And also because, like you said, they don't always have an understanding of what autism is and the stigma that's behind it, especially when it's like their first child. They may not know what to look for and what autism looks like. So for them, seeing these symptoms in their child may not be anything out of the ordinary because they have nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Stephanie is saying. A lot of the kiddos that I worked with, even adults, more of the kiddos, I worked more with the Caucasian families than I did the Latinx families, but because I was honestly one of the few Spanish-speaking respite, they would send me out a lot to the homes. And I would see that discrepancy between the families. Even with the adults, just the transitional programs were a lot... it was just a lot more different when it came to reaching the resources. And like I said earlier, each case is different. Each family experiences it different. But one thing I did notice was there was a lot of mental health issues within the families because of that extra stressor. I remember having a family that, you know, the one thing that they did a lot was grieve over the fact that they didn't have a child that was going to have a typical life compared to another child. So it's really interesting the different dynamics and the way that families process it differently too.
Yeah, and I think the stigma, besides that we lack resources, mm-hmm. the stigma there is still so deep. Because, you know, I did some reading, some articles when I thought of this episode and a little bit of the statistics that I shared at the beginning, I read a lot. Yes, we are the population that has the less percentage of autistic kids, but we're also the population that has the less percentage of resources. And the stigma is still so high, even within our communities. I think entre familia and family members, they're not educated. So when you come out with, I have an autistic kid, everyone's like, whoa, what do we do with that? You know? And it's just, it really, there's a lack of education. But I actually know a family who has an autistic child, and within their family relatives, they have two other. So I had heard from them that when the first child was diagnosed with autism, that's when it hit the family the hardest. But as they educated themselves and then the other family members, mm-hmm. you know, came across the situation, there was more unidad, there was more support because they were able to be like, we've seen this before. Yeah. To where the first case, it was lonely, it was difficult, you know, yeah. they didn't know what they were dealing with.
Yeah, and I think Estefania brought up a really good point in saying that with Caucasian families, they're more aware of the resources that are available, whereas, you know, that Latinx community, it's a little harder in general to get help or assistance because they don't trust the system. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it falls back on a lot of cultural factors as well.
Yeah. And at times it's also because they might be in denial of, like Carla said, like they're going to have to grieve not having a typical developing child. So just being in denial to what family might say or having to raise a child that isn't typical. Like, I have a family member who has a child with autism, and at first it was very hard for her. She noticed that there were behaviors that weren't typical because it wasn't her first child, but it took her a while for her to go get the services and the resources that she needed just because she couldn't accept the fact that it was happening to her child.
Yeah, and I think even, I mean, I know this episode centers around el autismo, but, you know, there's other developmental disabilities as well. For example, Down syndrome. It's a struggle within all of that, and I think Estefania brings a good point in that it's a huge impact on the family. And, for example, like, trying to find those resources within itself is a stressor. And having to go through the process is another. And that's not something that a typical family has to go through, which adds on to everything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we all know our comunidad Latina, la gente tiene tanto estrés. Tienen que trabajar, tienen que asegurar que las cosas estén bien. And then this on top and not knowing much about it, I can imagine how hard it is. I really can. Thank you, ladies. Thank you for that. So our next question is, it falls right into this too, but what are some techniques that you guys have seen that you can share that are effective for parents to try, or maybe some resources you guys might know about? What does a parent do when they encounter this? What have you guys seen that has worked to make it a little bit easier?
I think it's a difficult thing to go through. Even, I mean, we all go through stressors within our lives. But I think with all the stress that's going on, and it becomes the center of your world because you're trying to provide your child with a better life than what, you know, the stigma says. And I think the number one technique that's important for all of us really is self-care. And I've seen a lot of families that their families just kind of crumble because of the fact that they don't self-care, that they're so focused on their child that they forget that they have a partner. They forget that there's other children in the household, and they don't dedicate that time to their partner or their other children or even the extended family, especially with the Latino community, that extended family is very important for us. And it's hard to keep those relationships if you don't self-care, if you're so focused on making sure that your child has a better life than what the stigma says.
All right. Thank you. That was very informative. Go ahead.
I agree with you. I feel like that's the biggest thing that people forget to do, self-care. And that's something that I would tell, like, some of the parents that I would work with. It's like, you need to remember to also take care of yourself, because how are you supposed to take care of your other children if you can't take care of yourself? Like, that's also important. So, you know, for them to go to therapy, and the other children, if there's siblings involved, having those siblings be in therapy as well, because I feel like they're forgotten a lot of the times because everything is centered around the child who has autism. So that's also important. And I think ABA services are really, really great because it provides that one-on-one interaction and help for the child at home. Or even at school, because sometimes at school, with having so many children in one classroom, they may not be getting the attention that they need. And having either an aide or an ABA therapist be in there with them is a great help.
Yeah, that child I was telling you guys about in my preschool class, he had an aide, or I don't know if she was an ABA therapist, but she came every morning in with him, and everyone interacted with him wonderfully, but it did make it helpful to have her there because she understood him more than anyone else, you know?
And one of the biggest things, too, for a lot of the kids who have autism is that structure and having a routine and a schedule, because whenever that gets interrupted, that's when you'll see a lot of those behaviors come up. So that's something that I would do a lot with the kids. We would have like an actual visible schedule on the wall just so they could see it and visualize it. And that would be very helpful for a lot of parents and for the children to know like how their day was going to be.
And I think also like finding parent mentors as well. I think that's also very important to have as a resource to fall back on whenever you have questions, or if there's maybe they're going through the same thing, or if not the same thing, but similar emotions that they have to process. And that can be a part of self-care too, is, you know, taking time and going to have a cup of coffee with those mentors to just vent it out, or, you know, not even vent it out, just ignore what's going on in the world for a minute and just focus on yourself. And there's actually a really good organization called TACA. It stands for Talk About Curing Autism, and they have a lot of resources, a lot of coffee talks. They provide a lot of services. I know they have a lot of, they have information and access to a lot of caseworkers that can potentially help whatever transitional program you're trying to put your child in. They also have coffee talks. They have this really cool conference in October that's a weekend long, and they have a lot of nutritionists and doctors and therapists.
That's amazing.
And they have a weekend long, they do presentations, they do a bunch of stuff, activities. They have centers for the kids or even adults that have autism so that they can interact as well. So it's a really cool organization. If you want to look into it, and it provides a lot of information. I feel like not a lot of people know about places like that.
Yeah, and to our listeners, I will definitely get that information from Carla, and I'll put it on Instagram because I think it's good to put those resources out there. And that was basically our next two questions. We wanted to know, like, if you've worked with non-Latino families, what are some of the differences that you see between them and Latino families, and how resources are available to them? So I know, Estefania, you spoke a little bit of working with Caucasian families. What are some of the differences you see within them and our Latino community, besides obviously that they lack education with this topic and stuff, but what does that look like?
Well, at least what I saw, I felt like they were a lot more united, but I think it goes back to the fact that they had like that education and they knew what it was and what they were dealing with. So you could tell that, you know, both parents were involved, they were supporting each other, they had like communication, and they structured out the day like, okay, you can take them to these appointments, I'll take them to those appointments. So they like just coordinated everything. And I feel like with the Latino families that I work with, it wasn't always like that. It was always either more of mom being involved and dad not really being in the picture, and then other siblings not getting the attention they needed. So I feel like there was a lot more going on. And you could tell, like, the moms were usually, you know, very stressed out and frustrated. So they just lacked that support.
Yeah, I completely agree with what she said. I definitely would see that too. A lot of the families had a lot more confidence to advocate for themselves and advocate for their needs. And it was really unfortunate to see the Latino community not be as vocal about their needs. I remember having this one case that this child would come home from school casi todos los días con new cuts, new scratches, blood on his shirt. And it was because he was being picked on by another child. Supposedly, they were supposed to have aids as well, especially because of that, of he was getting injured. But I don't know what happened. So mom called the school. She's Spanish speaking. She wanted to do a meeting with the teacher to see what other resources there was so that her child can keep from getting hurt. Because, you know, your child's coming home with blood on his shirt, that something is not right there.
Yeah, and it's serious.
Yeah, and it's serious. So they gave her the meeting. I, at the time, was working respite, so I didn't have any certification. I had barely started. You know, I wasn't really, I didn't have as much resources and knowledge as I do now. But she asked me if I could go with her, and I told her, you know, I don't know that it would be ethical of me to go because I'm not certified to do this. I'm not certified to translate. She's like, I know, but I just would feel more comfortable if there was someone there that felt the same rage I did to see my son come home like this.
Oh,
so
wow.
I agreed and I went, and it was ridiculous. I left with my blood boiling because it was me, mom, kiddo, and teacher and the translator. And teacher was, the whole gist of the meeting was that she wanted extra aid one-on-one for her kiddo. And teacher basically was telling her the pros and cons of it, why they could and couldn't do it, just, you know, giving her basic information. And there was one specific thing. I don't remember exactly what it was, but she told the translator, let's not tell her this part, but make sure she knows this part. And I looked at her and was like, what part don't you want to tell her? Because her son's coming home drenched in blood and you're withholding information from her. That is very unethical. You're her,
wow.
You're her child's teacher and you're trying to withhold information. I was really upset. And the translator obviously translated everything that the teacher said. But I went back and I told her, okay, and they also wanted to keep this from you. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but I do remember being super annoyed and irritated. And I was so upset that they would do something like that. So imagine, you know, you're going in there, lucky for her and lucky for me that I was there to hear that. But you're going in there not knowing any English.
Not, or thinking you can trust the people
exactly.
of this system and they're not giving you all the information
exactly.
that you need to know. Yeah, that's
exactly.
not
so,
cool.
I can see a lot of families don't have trust within the system, and it's ridiculous. And I was really upset from that. And I think that's why it motivated me to continue working with these families and advocate for them, because they don't have anyone to do that. They don't have a voice as much as other people do.
I agree. And like I said, it's awesome that you guys work with this community, because there's not enough information
mm-hmm.
and knowledge and education out there. Estefania, sorry, we...
No, it's okay, and I agree, because, like, you bring up a great point. Sometimes the schools, instead of working with you, they're going to work against you. Like, I had a client when I was doing my internship for my marriage family therapy who has autism, and she had an IEP, and the school was just, like, I would get upset every time I would talk to the school and to mom, because they weren't doing anything to help the child. Like, they... knew that mom didn't know all of the resources that were out there for her, so they would try to, like, you know, just not answer the questions she was asking. They were finding a way to get around it. So mom was doing a really good job in, like, finding out what she needed to know, like, getting that knowledge and the education. And she would, you know, fight back and talk to school, but, like, no, I need to know, like, it's for my child's best interest. So they would just try and try, and she finally was able to get a lawyer involved, and that's the only way that she got the school to, you know, cooperate, because they were not doing what they were supposed to.
Yeah.
That is so upsetting, like super upsetting, because these are our children going to these schools that are supposed to prepare them and supposed to protect them and supposed to educate them and help them in whatever it is they need, including their parents, and then they're getting shut down. Like, I'm so shocked by both of you guys' stories. I literally cannot believe
yeah,
this.
It's unfortunate and it's ridiculous. And, yeah. You know, that's something that I feel like our system really needs to change.
Yeah, I agree. All right, ladies. So the next question was, or next two questions is if you guys had or had any knowledge of what kind of resources are out there that we can provide to our families. If you didn't bring a list or names of any places right now, it's okay. Maybe you can give me some later on and we can put them on our Instagram so our listeners know what's out there. And then our last question to add to that is just, is there anything else you guys want to add? Any words of advice, encouragement to our Latino community, especially those parents or families that might be listening and are dealing with this population?
I think the only thing I want to say is, you know, those parents that really know how to advocate for themselves, and even those parents that have a harder time to do the time doing it. I really want to encourage them to continue and also to self-care, because at the end of the day, you know, there's that metaphor that when you're on a plane, you have to help yourself before you help someone else, because mm-hmm. if not, you can pass out. And, you know, it's really true. It's cliche, I know, but
it's actually one of my favorites, because it's true. You can't put the oxygen mask on someone else if you haven't figured out how to put it on yourself.
So I think that's the only word of advice that I really, really want to keep repeating is self-care, because if you don't take care of yourself, nobody will.
Especially to our Latino parents, man. Los padres Latinos son tan amorosos y nos quieren a los hijos. Pase lo que pase, hagamos lo que hagamos, y es un amor tan grande y tan bello, pero al mismo tiempo se descuidan. Uh-huh. Y es muy importante lo que estaba diciendo Carla, es que es muy importante, especialmente si tienes hijos con el autismo o ADHD o cualquier cosa que estés pasando con tus hijos, que te acuerdes que te cuides a ti misma o mismo, que... Porque tú tienes que estar bien para poder cuidar a la familia. Estefanía, any final thoughts?
Just what Carla was saying, just to do a lot of self-care. It is stressful and it is a lot of work, but, you know, it just shows how strong and caring those families are, and just to, you know, seek therapy for themselves if they need it, and seek therapy for the other siblings that are involved, because oftentimes they're also forgotten, or they feel like their parents don't care about them. So I feel like they grow up with a lot of either resentment or anger or other issues. So that's something that they can work on in like family therapy, and just understanding autism better and what it is and what they can do to support each other.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that's definitely why Dawn Marie and I chose this topic and have chosen other topics within our podcast, because it's all about education and getting the word out there and telling our Latino community, you're not the only one dealing with this. Muchas veces la gente piensa, oh, solo me está pasando a mí y no sé qué voy a hacer y no sé cómo lo voy a arreglar. But if you know that there's resources out there, that there's wonderful people like these two young ladies here with us that are working with the community and are doing their best to advocate and to educate, that's definitely where we start. All right, ladies, so thank you. I just want to thank you both. Thank you so much for joining us today and to be able to talk to our community about this very important topic. It's really unfortunate that Dawn Marie wasn't able to join us, but I hope you guys enjoyed being a part of this episode. I really do appreciate your time. And as you guys know, at the end of every episode, we have what we call Chisme del Día. So ladies, are you up for some chisme?
Of course.
Yes.
All right. So today's Chisme del Día, I want to talk a little bit about holiday spending. So holidays have become the capitalistic reason record for spending, especially on Black Friday and Cyber Monday. So I read that on those 2 days, they accumulated at about $15 billion spend in just that weekend. Who knows where we're at now? What's today? December the 13th.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but I've been shopping a lot more lately because it's getting closer to the Christmas day. Yeah. But it also means that many who don't have the money to buy are doing what? Charging it and accumulating the debt. So I cannot imagine what the debt level is at. So I just wanted to put that out there. Because holidays have become this capitalistic, you know, thing, and it's, unfortunately, I mean, it's still about spending time with the family and traditions, but gifts really do take over, like, the whole idea of Christmas and spending. I mean, as you guys know, a lot of people start shopping on Thanksgiving Day. Like, nobody gets together for dinner anymore because they're at the mall.
Or they get together early and then they're like, okay, ya nos vamos, besito, besito, y se van.
Exactly. So
they all go shopping together.
Yeah, they all go shopping together. And so we just wanted to put that out there to our listeners that if times are hard, or if you're not able to gift what you need to, what you want to give people, if you're not able to spend what you're trying to spend, it's okay. It's about family and spending time con la familia, con la comunidad, con las tradiciones. And don't let this capitalism take over and make you forget what the real purpose of the holidays are. And with that said, I just also want to say that holidays may feel lonely. Triggered is when we're reminded more of our lost loved ones or traumatic experiences. This time of the year is when we think, we backtrack, we reflect on how we did or how we ended at this point in our lives. It's when we think more about our unhappiness. And this is a busy time for hospitals, and I'll let these girls chime in because you do have two mental health professionals, three of us here. Yeah. But there's a lot on depression and anxiety this time of year. So we just want to remind you guys to self-care, as Carla was saying earlier, to take some time to, you know, focus on your gratitude and the real purpose of the holidays. And if you are alone out there, or if you don't have big family or big gatherings, that you find help and that you find what you need to feel better.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Kelsey. This time it's a lot harder on families and on children and adolescents when they don't have someone that they usually used to spend their time with, or if they just recently lost someone. Or, you know, I definitely agree with her saying get that self-care in. Find the people you find the most comforting, the ones that support you the most, los que te apoyan en todo. Those are the people that you want to be around this time of the year.
Yeah, I agree, because unfortunately, this is also the time where we see a lot of, you know, people and teens trying to either, you know, commit suicide or have those thoughts, unfortunately. So that's another thing to keep in mind, just being supportive with one another and just being there for each other.
Yeah, I work at a, my practicum site is at a center where it's inpatient 5150. Yeah. And it's so sad, but someone mentioned that the other day and they're like, is it just me or is our phone ringing more these days?
Yeah,
because we're getting calls to see if we have room and if we have space. And I mean, it's wonderful for the facilities, I guess. Because they're able to get patients in, and, you know, as we know, everything runs on money. And so I'm sure they're like, oh, it's busy time of the year. But when you're hearing those phone rings and, you know, getting calls and stuff, you just think like, oh man, like it's sad because we don't know what people are dealing with. And yeah, some of us might have, you know, big families or whatever, but some people don't have anyone. And, I don't know about you guys, but this is definitely the time of the year that I think more of the people I've lost. I think of my grandmother, I think of my mother, I think of people that aren't here with me, because it gets lonely. So
yeah. And I think it's also important to mention that the children and teenagers feel it too. I mean, I've done two threat assessments this week alone, yesterday and today, and it's crazy to think about that. And the children feel the stress, and like Kelsey said, this is a stressful time, especially if you don't have the resources or the money to provide them with what they want. Just remind them that, you know, the love that you have for them is bigger than any materialistic thing you could give them, and support them. And, you know, I know sometimes parents can get very stressed and they take it out on their children, and just try to be a little mindful on that. Kids and teenagers also feel that end of the stress that you're feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I work at a shelter where a lot of the kids come from, like, hospitals after, you know, a 5150, and we just try to keep the environment positive because we have seen a lot of them pretty low lately and down. So we do emotional check-ins with them in the morning, afternoons, and nights just to see how they're doing and if they need to talk to one of the therapists there. Yeah, just trying to keep it positive. And I know it's like the holidays, but even though it's the holidays and a lot of people are happy, we have a lot of people who are feeling sad and missing people who aren't here with them right now.
Yeah, and to our listeners that are listening, if you are blessed with the big family or people around you that love and care, just make sure that you're mindful of those that are alone during this holiday season, of the people that are dealing with hard times out there. Give someone a smile, donate, volunteer if you have the time. Use your resources to help others and maybe make this holiday time a little bit easier for those in need. And with that said, I actually have a friend that went to Tijuana today with a bunch of donations and took stuff to the children and the people at the border. And I thought it was just so wonderful that they were able to do this for them, because this thing at the border with the caravan is something really serious that I think a lot of people are deciding to sort of ignore or turn the cheek to kind of pretend like it's not happening. But we got to remember that it is happening. And I wanted this to be our next topic for our Chisme del Día, because I came across a post on the Washington Post today about a 7-year-old migrant girl that was taken into Border Patrol custody and died of dehydration and exhaustion. So, unfortunately, the child and her father did come or were coming to the United States illegally. They were looking to apply for asylum. And after taken into custody shortly after, the child started to have seizures and did die from this. And from my knowledge, is that the process when they're taken in, they're supposed to be given a medical exam, and then we are supposed to be providing food and drink water and, keeping them okay until they figure out what they're doing with them. So it's just really unfortunate that this happened to this girl, in our custody. So in a sense, it's like, what happened? What led to this, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I think the whole situation is unfortunate. I think the fact that, yes, they did cross illegally, but I can't believe that people can't look past that. Like, where's the humanity in that? People don't choose to leave their homes just because one day they wake up and like, oh, you know what? I might like it more over there. No. They choose to leave their homes because they don't feel safe. They don't have the resources to maintain their family. They choose to leave their home to have a better life, not just because they wanted to. And I feel like a lot of people don't see past the fact that it's illegal crossing. It's like, okay, we need to see the humanity behind this. And it's unfortunate that, these children are dying in our custody.
Yeah, there's like a lack of empathy, and I feel like a lot of people just are ignoring the situation or don't want to talk about it just so they feel like it doesn't exist, but that's not going to make it go away. Like, no, those are people that need help, that they're coming for a reason. Like Carla said, they're not leaving their home because they want to. Sometimes, like, there's a lot going on over there, crime or other things that they might be running away from, and they're just looking for a place where they can start over. And have a better future for themselves and for their children.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you decide to leave, if you decide to leave your home and that was your choice because you wanted a better life, but nobody comes with the plan that you're gonna get to the border and they're gonna throw tear gas at you and your child might die and they're not gonna give you the basic needs, which is like water. And I know that it's not mandatory. And people say, well, they chose to leave and they should have known they weren't going to arrive to paradise. But it's like Carla was saying, it's the humane part that if they don't have a cup of water, like, si no le puedes ofrecer a alguien un vaso de agua, there must be a reserved spot for you in hell.
Yeah.
It's
And
really unfortunate.
honestly, that's only one story that we know of. Like, we there's a lot more going on that doesn't come up in TV and doesn't come up in news articles. So we also have to consider that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, ladies. Well, thank you so much again for joining me today. That sounds weird. Dawn Marie, we miss you. Because usually we say us, but it's been great that we were still able to do this episode. As our listeners, as we told you at the beginning, this is our last episode of the season. We do have an entire exciting season planned for you guys already, but that will start up again after the holidays. So thank you, ladies, again for joining us. Thank you for being a part of our Chisme del Día. It's been wonderful having you guys here. And please keep doing what you're doing, advocating for these families, not only with the autistic community and ADHD, but just our community is our familia. And they need us to get out there and to represent them right. So thank you, guys. And we hope you're listening to our episodes and that you leave your feedback as well and share this episode with all your friends and family. And yeah, so this is the end, everyone. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. If you're not Christian, Happy Holidays. And we will see you guys again in 2019.
Thank you for having us. Congratulations.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. All right. Bye, everyone.